Thanks for tuning in to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Jean A. Youngblood. Since 2015, Dr. Youngblood has taken scores of questions and comments on the challenging issues of the day with a goal of motivating and informing listeners to examine the issues from a central biblicist worldview. Currently, this broadcast is heard on 3 regional stations in Florida and Georgia. Dr. Youngblood's expository preaching is heard on 2 stations in Ohio and Virginia, as well as Brunswick, Georgia, St. Augustine, and Jacksonville, Florida. There's now a great opportunity to expand this vital ministry to other cities, and we sincerely need your help to accomplish this mission. Your support in any amount is needed to take this next step in sharing God's truth in a relevant, lively, and timely way. Thanks for your willingness to support this broadcast as we prepare to face the issues on a broader scale. Please go to fcbcatjax.com and click the donation button, or send your best gift to First Conservative Baptist Church, 12021 Old St. Augustine Road, Jacksonville, Florida, 32258. Attention Radio.
Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Jean A. Youngblood is brought to you by First Conservative Baptist Church. Now let's get back to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Jean A. Youngblood.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're delighted to have you on board with us today as we face the issues. Let me remind you that call-in telephone number is 831-0917, 831-0917. We'd love to have your input, your dialogue and discussion, your questions, and your comments relative to our discussion on Let's Face the Issues today. We're talking about after COVID, what? We have the privilege of having Jeff Childers, a practicing attorney in Gainesville, Florida, that is with us today. We're talking about COVID, his experience in some of the cases that he's handled, about the mask mandates and some of the lockdown events that he has handled in the court of law. And Jeff, again, thank you for joining us. Looking forward to having further dialogue and discussion with you and others. Greg, are you still on the line with us today?
I am right here with you.
All right, Jeff, if you would continue your thoughts in relationship to the question that Greg had asked earlier.
Sure. So let's switch to the second issue, Greg, that you brought up, which is about the prospects for people to obtain justice for their loved ones who were killed in the hospital on what here at the office we call the hospital death protocol. Or maybe I should say for the folks that were mistreated in the hospital. That remains a developing area. There are several big hurdles, as I'm sure you know, such as the PREP Act on the federal level, which provides legal liability protection to healthcare providers who are involved in the pandemic response, as long as they follow the recommended guidelines. And that is one reason why the hospitals universally were doing exactly what the CDC was suggesting, as they were tracking that that federal liability law. Then in every one of the 50 states, they passed a liability shield at the state level as well for a second level of protection. And the language of those state laws typically track the federal law, but in a simpler form. And again, they provide liability protection to any healthcare provider who is following the recommended guidelines for the pandemic response. So those are two significant hurdles to suing for money damages. Now, you brought up the possibility of criminal potential criminal conviction, and that's an interesting thought. And what I've been telling folks is that, number one, you have to keep in mind that citizens can't bring criminal charges against other citizens. So a law enforcement agency would have to bring criminal charges. And that would, at the county level, that's typically your district attorney, which is typically an elected position. So I have been encouraging citizens to recruit and run candidates at the local level who agree to pursue these kind of claims as criminal events rather than as civil events. So that's, I want to make sure my whole strategy for this thing is something I call local, local, local. I think we can fix almost every problem we have at the local level. We don't need Superman to fly into Washington, D.C. and fix it for us. Now, to give you some hope on the civil liability side, you know, with the understanding that the clocks on the statutes of limitations are running, the good news is that there are more attorneys involved in this space than there ever have been. You know, when I first started back in early 2020 and even mid-2020, there were hardly any experienced attorneys who were litigating these kind of cases. Everybody was afraid to get involved. And that spirit of fear seems to have lifted. And I've lost track now of how many attorneys are taking these cases. So with that many attorneys, all of us trying to find a creative way around these liability shields, I would say there's good odds that somebody's going to figure something out. And whenever somebody does figure out a pathway, then it will spread like wildfire and everybody will be doing it. So that's the best I got for you right now.
Greg, you have any other thoughts or questions relative
to that? It is great to realize that your thoughtful analysis on it and the hope in the midst of such chaos to realize that such abuse has taken place for, you know, going on 3 years. And you know, so many folks have been harmed. I believe had the government decided to go hands-off, we would have had half the carnage, if that, compared to what we have, the amount of damage done, and to follow CDC protocols exclusively without regard to the ordinary practice of medicine, where each doctor does which they see is in the best interest of their patient, of their client. That went out the window in favor of a set of protocols that we know, based on observation, you see that remdesivir had a problem, correct? There's a problem with this, and there's a problem with putting people on high-dose blood thinners as soon as they walk in the door. It's a problem with intubating people prematurely. There's a problem with, and you see this in tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of cases. It's just horrific, but thank you so much for taking a stand and challenging these things within the courts of law.
Greg, thank you so much
for
calling, for your questions. By the way, ladies and gentlemen, that's Greg Youngblood. He's calling from the southern tip of heaven, which is up in, geographically, up in the northeast corner of Tennessee. And I'm thankful for his insight. And by the way, Greg has his credentials in ecclesiastical jurisprudence, which is constitutional law and theology. And I'm thankful for his wisdom in that realm. Thank you for your call. I believe we have Jim on the line. Jim, go with the question or comment, please.
Dr. Youngblood, Jeff, how are you guys doing today?
Great. I pray that you are.
Doing good, doing good. This, I understand that the National Institute for Health, under direction of Anthony Fauci, directed or gave funds to Echo Health, which in turn gave to the Wuhan lab. So the ultimate culpability rests in the developers of this virus there, but seeing how they are a communist-controlled entity there in China, the government, you know, basically owns all institutions there, what legal repercussions or how would law proceed against this lab or against China on any level? And that's the first question. The second question is the Chinese will not turn over any data or any documentation of what they were doing within that lab. So where does it proceed along that lines, Jeff?
So there's you know, I don't know, but maybe an infinite number of possibilities at the state level, right? If China unleashed a weapon of mass destruction on the world and in particular on the United States, whether intentionally or negligently, then that's a serious issue between states, right? Between nations. And you know, I don't know. You're probably going to be thinking the same thing I'm about to say, which is, you may doubt whether this particular administration has the stuff that is necessary to pursue an issue like that, but there will be future administrations. And I think part of the reason that we're seeing these disclosures by the government agencies is because they're trying to put pressure on China in that way. Now, here's an interesting wrinkle. I think I want to say it was during the Obama administration, Congress passed a law that allowed you to sue foreign countries in U.S. courts. And the intention for that at the time was they wanted to sue some of the Arab countries under construction contracts from U.S. contractors that were building refineries and things over there, I think. So in any event, you can now bring a lawsuit against an entire foreign country here in the U.S. if it's a recognized claim of law. There's still some pretty serious issues that you have to get over to bring a lawsuit like that. You have to be able to show causality. And as you pointed out, the links are pretty weak. The reports from the FBI and the Department of Energy are short, and they don't provide much specific information, not enough to support a lawsuit. And you're not going to get that information from the Chinese. But you know what? Stand by, because every day it seems like something else is coming out. So we may get to that point. That's a very interesting subject area that bears paying attention to.
Jim, how did that, is that satisfactory? You have any other questions or comments?
That's satisfactory there. I mean, I understand that the litigation will be complex and, who's the culpability issues, but I just have no faith in the current Chinese government to say, oh, hey, here's all the information and all our research and here's all our data and our documentation and our bad, we'll pay.
This might be an answer there, Jeff, and hang on, Jim, and let me just read a brief paragraph from a major article. Chinese virologist says COVID-19 was intentionally released. A Chinese virologist says COVID-19 pandemic that killed many around the world was a result of an intentional release by the Communist Chinese Party. Dr. Ling Meng Yang was interviewed by Fox News Tucker Carlson following an announcement from the U.S. Energy Department that concluded the virus likely came from Chinese lab. She had earlier said back in 2020, had warned that the coronavirus came from the lab, and it was a milestone achievement for that lab. Of course, she said, it was not an accident, she told Carlson. She said the government intentionally manufactured and intentionally released the virus worldwide, end quote. So with that being said, I don't know. In fact, she's basically staying in hiding. She has said that the Communist Chinese Party has said that if she continues to talk about this, they're going to make her disappear, is her terms in her interview with Tucker Carlson. So does that shed any light on that question, Jim and or Jeff?
Well, I'll field it, Jim. These kind of articles are very interesting, and, you know, they may shed a little bit of light on what has been a very opaque situation, but unfortunately you can't use a news article as evidence in a court case.
Correct.
So without being able to take that lady's deposition and get her in front of a judge, which doesn't sound like it's going to be easy based on what you read, it's more of something for interest rather than for a lawsuit.
Yes. All right, Jim, thank you so much for your call.
Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you both.
Yes, thank you. Marshall, I believe we have Marshall on the line. Marshall, go over the question or comment, please.
Yes, good afternoon, gentlemen. I apologize for my voice. The pollen has taken its toll on my vocal cords, but let me see if I can struggle through a comment or two. First of all, I appreciate the show, and I think what is being said this morning through Counselor Childers and yourself, Doc, is particularly important. My comment's going to be based on this particular circumstance or set of circumstances. I've known two veteran godly pastors who had their sons murdered over the last 18 to 24 months, who those men themselves were pastors, and a third veteran pastor in California in robust health who himself was nearly murdered by the medical regimen imposed on these medical professionals, if you wish to call them that, who are following this federal protocol that's intended, in my view, to achieve a very nefarious agenda. The conclusion of what I'm going to say will lead to this point. We need principled, moral men with a huge dose of proactive masculinity to step up to the plate right now behind a single spear point leader who is going to push back legally but very aggressively against what is being revealed in our country. Counselor Childers referred, I think, in passing in the beginning of the first segment to Isaiah 30:21, which says, "You shall hear a voice behind you when you turn to the left or the right, saying, walk ye in this way." And I believe very strongly, and I think the Bible supports, that God in times of crisis, Gideon would be an example, that God in times of crisis will select a particular group of men to step up to the plate and do what needs to be done. You, Doc, are one of those. Certainly, Counselor Childers would be one also. But one of the things that we have to deal with is understand what the legal system tells us. And when there's a conviction, and I'm not an attorney or pretending to be one, but I do know that when you seek an conviction, you must have at least overwhelming circumstantial evidence, and even that sometimes may not be good. And at the best, you have a high probability of forensic or factually indisputable evidence will be the foundation of a conviction. Now, in the process of getting that conviction in the world that we live in, taking it out of the legal arena, I think we need to apply the law of the naked emperor. We need to believe our eyes. We have all these facts out there, circumstantial, but really even beyond that, they're just indisputable forensic facts that tell us that something very, very evil is being done in our culture. There is something or some group of people behind the scenes that are manipulating our world in a way that has never been manipulated before, and particularly the American culture is being manipulated. And it's sort of it's a ruse, I guess, that the bad guys are doing. Thomas Cole has a great painting called The Voyage of Life, and in the four panels, the second panel deals with the young man who has finally taken over the helm of his life with an angel, protective angel on the shore, and his eyes are on this great castle in the distance, in the heavens. But if you look in this wonderful painting in the foreground, but still in the distance, you see that the river that he is on doesn't lead straight to that beautiful paradise the young man is going to. It actually, in the distance, takes a sharp bend into some rocks and disappears into some very turbulent and dangerous waters. America has been allowed to believe through our current leadership that we're heading in a good direction to a brave new world that you alluded to earlier. We're not. We're heading into a miasma of turbulent waters and destruction of which we have no idea except for those few men who God is telling to step forward and take a stand. Doc is one. Attorney Childers is another. But I believe, frankly, and I'm going to make a political comment and quit, we have one option in the coming election, and most people are now pulling back away from that man. But there is an individual who is bombastic. He's got warts all over him in some ways in his behavior, but he has the masculinity to push back against this darkness. And if we don't do that, if we don't come together against a single point of the spear and push back as legally but aggressively as we can, and actually probably one of the best test cases is just this COVID-19 nonsense that is absolute sophistry, we will lose the country. It may even be too late. Now, I'm going to shut up. That's a long diatribe, and I didn't focus as you probably would have liked me to focus. But the bottom line is this. Something's going on. We need to believe our eyes. men need to step up to the plate and do something, and it needs to be godly, principled men to do it. And we're also going to need a leader, and I think God has given us one. I hope we don't pull back from him. End of commentary, and I appreciate you putting up with my words this morning. God bless you.
Marshall, thank you so much for calling, and you were alluding to Donald J. Trump, and I'm in full agreement with your statements on that, and I believe that is the direction that God would have us to go and not be divided over it. Jeff, thank you so much again for your dialogue and your discussion with us today. We're talking about after COVID, what? Ladies and gentlemen, that telephone number is 831-0917, 831-0917. Jeff, what is the term? I've heard you use it before. Hospital kidnapping. What does that connote, and how do you explain that to our listeners?
Sure. That was a term that we came up with around the office starting in the summer of 21, probably going all the way through the summer of 22, maybe later, and what it referred to is calls that we would get from, you know, average folks who had a loved one in a hospital for COVID treatment. Many times that person had gone into the hospital for something completely different, but they tested positive, and before they knew it, they were on the COVID floor hooked up to a ventilator. So these folks who called us wanted to get their loved ones out of the hospital. And many times they had even found another doctor who had agreed to provide treatment and maybe a different hospital where they could go, a smaller local place or something like that. And the astounding thing was that these hospitals refused to discharge those patients. And there was, you know, nothing you could offer them. You could say, well, we'll sign any waiver you want. We want to be released against medical advice. Just, you know, let us get them out of there. And the hospital would say no. I sued one hospital in Jacksonville, actually, and I took them up on appeal to try to get somebody released who was willing to, again, their relatives who had power of attorney were willing to sign releases or whatever was necessary, but the hospital wouldn't let go of the guy, and they spent probably hundreds of thousands of dollars on legal bills to keep that patient there. So we started calling those hospital kidnapping cases.
It's a good illustration and term, and I'm sure that you're aware of the fact that Senate Bill 988 became law, and in that Senate Bill 988, which is now law, it says that hospitals cannot refuse to allow a patient's family or relatives to come in and visit. However, they do have a caveat in that law that the hospitals have the right to have a protocol that they need to post on their website 30 days in advance of that protocol going into effect so that the family members and the relatives can know what is required. In fact, I had some major input on that particular bill and was very dissatisfied with some of our Duval delegation allowing some pressure to be put on and changing it. Because if they're going to have the protocol, they could say, well, you've got to have the COVID jab before you go in. You've got to put on the robes, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. All of that almost negates that kind of law. Jeff, this is my question with that rambling. Do you believe it's time that we have some type of legislation that will peel the onion and give true patient's bill of rights, that they are fully informed and their family members, relatives can come in and visit without any intervention by the hospital? Howbeit, if the hospital says you need to put on a robe or a mask has no value whatsoever, but if that's the case to do so, but not extending that into saying you've got to have a COVID test or a COVID shot before you can go in. What's your take on that? Where do we go after COVID? What? And the question with that is, what do we do in relationship to dealing with the medical associations and the physicians? Some still demanding that you wear a mask. Some still demanding that you have COVID tests to be able to do certain things in a hospital, et cetera. What is your take on that? How should we, what should we believe or understand as we the people?
So it's funny that you asked that because I was having this conversation with someone just the other day. And, you know, there is a risk of overreacting and, you know, creating rules such as in a patient's bill of rights that might backfire at some point that we can't anticipate right now. But That being said, I like your idea of more transparency. We already have a patient's bill of rights. The problem is that the hospital doesn't make you aware of it, and it's almost unenforceable. Mm-hmm. So the first thing that I would do is require them to put their, you know, if they have a treatment protocol for a particular condition, that should be on the website. And I think a lot of people would have known that if they gone into the hospital with COVID, the only treatment they would be offered is remdesivir and a ventilator, and then palliative care as they were dying. That should have been on the website. And I think a lot fewer people would have gone into the hospital had they known that.
Jeff,
then, yeah, with regard to the patient's bill of rights, I think that the minimum improvement needs to be some mechanism of enforcement, whether it's a right to sue the hospital for violating it, or you know, some Department of Health office that, you know, complaints at least could be sent to or something. And then hospitals should be required to have patients sign that bill of rights, and it should go in the medical file. That's what I think.
Well answered. We got about a minute and a half, Jeff, so let me ask you a quick question and let you give a quick answer on that if possible. We talk about patients' bill of rights. There's the right to be informed of consent. There is about 1,297 side effects, as I understand it, on remdesivir. I've not talked with anyone, and I have a number of people that have experienced this, and most of those have faced major, major problems. Remdesivir is the CDC protocol. It destroys the lungs, the liver, the kidneys, and the heart. The patients are not being told. What recourse does a patient have with that, or the family?
Yeah. So there is a cause of action for failure to provide informed consent. And it could transform an ordinary negligence case, which is immunized by state liability protection. It could transform that into a battery claim, which is an intentional tort that is not protected by either the state or federal laws. So the argument's going to be about whether the hospital provided that person with informed consent or not. And what we've been seeing is that the hospitals are testifying that they did it verbally, and then the patient is not there because they're dead, and they're not there to contradict the hospital's testimony. So that gets a little tricky.
Yes.
I'll tell you
Funny story. Thank you, Jeff. Thank you so much for joining us today. I hate to cut you off, but our time has gone. We are up against the hard break. Our time is out for today. But Jeff Childers, thank you so much for joining us on Let's Face the Issues today. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for tuning in. Looking forward to meeting you next time on the air as, once again, we face the issues.
You have been listening to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood, pastor of First Conservative Baptist Church and president of Conservative Theological University, 12021 Old St. Augustine Road, Jacksonville, Florida, located 1 mile south of I-295. FCBC invites you to tune in nightly, 9 to 10, for expository preaching.